There is a lot happening in federal politics at the moment. There's a cabinet reshuffle. The JobKeeper payment ends on Monday. $125 million is being spent supporting the arts, and the boosting apprenticeship commencements wage subsidy is going gangbusters and has been extended. Joining me for a chat about it is Member for Barker, Tony Passon. Hi there, Tony.
Good morning, Jenny.
Let's start with JobKeeper. What will this wind back mean for our community?
Well, the first thing to say is this was well planned. JobKeeper was established initially for 6 months. It was extended for 12 months. It was always intended to be temporary. It's the single largest support mechanism ever legislated and provided for by our government. But it's important to note we're now in a position where we have returned more jobs to the economy than existed at the time of the commencement of the pandemic. It's also important to note that just because JobKeeper ends, that doesn't mean that the supports end. There are a series of programs that continue to operate in the community, some of which are targeted, airlines, travel agents, etc., and some are more broad-ranging. We've spoken previously, Jenny, about the success of the Home Builder program. We've got the hiring credit. We've got infrastructure programs being rolled out across the country. You mentioned in your introduction the Boosting Apprenticeships program. We are travelling through the recovery and we're at a very good point, but it was never envisaged that JobKeeper could be maintained forever, albeit that we extended it from 6 months to 12 months.
Mm. And I understand about 30 big companies are having to repay $180 million as well because they didn't need some of the benefits. There have been some rorts that need to be dealt with as well.
Well, Jenny, those are decisions for individual businesses. The imperative, effectively 12 months ago, was to ensure that we didn't experience the likes of the Great Depression as a result of the decisions we needed to necessarily take to keep Australians safe. 1 year and 2 days ago, the Prime Minister made an announcement closing pubs and clubs. Now, I, at the time, remember thinking that I couldn't imagine an Australia without pubs, but that's the decision we had to take, and we had to fill that economic void, and we did it very quickly, and when you do these things quickly, there is always the prospect of gaming, if you like. But I think it's fair to say that Australians are satisfied with where we have gotten the economy to relative to the rest of the world. I think we are the envy of the world, but there's more to do. The circumstance, however, is that JobKeeper couldn't continue and can't continue forever, and many of these companies are returning their JobKeeper payments voluntarily because they have in fact experienced much stronger than anticipated trading conditions, which is a great outcome for an economy that's in recovery.
So the government's going to be focusing on more individual industries now that maybe are more impacted than others, like the arts and tourism?
Well, Jenny, we've shown a willingness to be flexible throughout this pandemic. Where there was a need for broad-ranging quick-acting stimulus, we implemented it. Where there was a need for specific targeted programs, we've shown an ability to do that. I mentioned two previously, in particular the aviation sector and as well as travel agents. We continue to monitor situations and circumstances. In terms of tourism, of course, there was the recent announcement around a $1.2 billion package which will provide for cheap flights to tourism locations. We are seeking to be innovative, agile, targeted, and I think the proof is in the pudding. If you look at the Australian economy and where we find ourselves today and you compare that to economies around the rest of the world, we're doing particularly well. The numbers bear it out. The comparable first world economies around the world saw their economy shrink by 5.5%. The Australian economy shrank by 3.8%. And I feel like we're back in the game and fighting our way out of what were very difficult economic times.
And you mentioned the Boosting Apprenticeships Commencement Wage Subsidy. That supported 100,000 new apprenticeships in 5 months, and it's been so successful it's been extended.
That's right. We've taken the decision to allocate an additional $1.2 billion to this program. Your numbers are absolutely correct. 100,000 additional apprentices across Australia in 5 months. We've taken the decision not only to extend each of those subsidies, which is a 50% wage subsidy up to $7,000 a quarter for a full 12 months, but we've also extended the program, which means that we anticipate there'll be another 70 to 80,000 apprentices taken on. What does that mean at a local level? Jenny, what that means at a local level is 862 trainees and apprentices are in a job today that wouldn't have been in a job but for this wage subsidy. That means that in 4 years' time, there'll be 862 tradies and trainees fully qualified in the community doing work, hopefully, and this is my deep hope, reducing our reliance on the need to, if you like, bring in skilled migrants to meet these skill shortages. It's a real win, and as I'm travelling around the electorate, employers are taking the opportunity in circumstances where they can effectively have two apprentices for the price of one.
The member for Barker, Tony Passons, with me. Let's talk regional hospital doctor numbers and the Women's March in a moment. It's the Beatles to take us there. You're on 5MU. Tony Passon, the member for Barker, is with me. Thousands of women rallied this month for March for Justice, calling for more accountability when it comes to sex abuse allegations. Tony, for so long these issues have been dealt with behind closed doors, or according to some, victims swept under the carpet. Now, do you think it's fair to have a more robust public discussion about the treatment of women in society and in parliamentary roles?
Jenny, I'm always one for robust public discussions. I think the best disinfectant is sunlight, and what we have seen over the course of the last month is sunlight or the spotlight shining in some very dark places. I'm deeply disappointed by the behaviour of some people who are given the great privilege of working in this building, but at the same time, I'm incredibly encouraged by the strength of women in this place. And I say that across the ideological aisle, whether it's women from the Labor Party raising issues, the Greens, minor parties, or my good friend Nicole Flint, who has been exceptionally brave in recent days. We are seeing the spotlight shone in dark places, and that can only, Jenny, be a good thing. As someone who worked very hard to encourage Nicole Flint into politics, it's been a very hard month for me as I've watched her make the very tough decision that the cost associated with this role isn't something that she can continue to meet. And, you know, what I wouldn't say to the trolls out there, and not just because they targeted my good friend Nicole, but I saw an example overnight on someone's Twitter feed of an email exchange between a female member of parliament and a constituent, where that constituent hoped that that female member of parliament died from the vaccine. I mean, this has got to stop, Jenny. And we need strong representation from women across the ideological spectrum.
Do you think that there should be reform in federal parliament?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think anyone would suggest, after being made aware of circumstances this week, which I must say, Jenny, has become a great surprise to me. I literally am in the building talking to you right now, and I feel like a stranger in the building, given the information that's come to light this week. But in no one's world ever could people not think that, in light of those material facts, things don't have to change. They absolutely need to change. And I'm supportive of any measures that improves behavioural standards in this place.
Tell us about the cabinet reshuffle. What's happening with Christian Porter?
Well, at this stage, it's media speculation. I appreciate there's a lot of it around. These are questions for the Prime Minister, Jenny. He He is sovereign entirely when it comes to appointing his executive. I'll wait and see what decisions are made, and I'll leave it for commentators like yourself and others to make observations after those decisions are made, whatever those decisions are.
Before you go, Tony Passon, Kenny from Cadell, one of our listeners, has a question about healthcare. He says there's a shortage of doctors in his region up in the Riverland. There's no doc in Morgan but a part-time pharmacist or nurse. Here's what he has to say.
But he only comes every fortnight. Now, you've got kids here. Weather was warm. Snake bite. Spider bite. And then you've got to rush them to Wakeree, 36 k's away. To me, that's not good enough.
So, I mean, it's not a new issue having doctor shortages in regional areas. Is there anything being done about this?
Jenny, there's a lot being done, but the challenge we have is that not so much that we have a doctor shortage in this country, but that we have a doctor maldistribution problem. There are too many doctors working in the cities and too few doctors working in the regions, and even fewer doctors working in places that are more remote, like Cadell, Morgan, etc. Personally, I'm now of the view that notwithstanding all the things that we've done in the past, sought to train more country students into general practice, worked on programs to bring skilled migrants, medical practitioners and professionals to Australia and place them or seed them in the country, notwithstanding all those measures which have been good and should be maintained, the reality is we need a more forceful solution. In my view, that forceful solution is postcode-specific Medicare numbers. What does that mean? Well, in my view, when the government is asked to allocate a Medicare number, so you go and see a doctor, they bill Medicare by using their Medicare ID, effectively. That's the provider number. That's a decision that's in the gift of the federal government because, of course, we pay the Medicare rebate. My view is we need a system whereby future Medicare provider numbers are tied to specific locations where there are doctor shortages. That will mean that a doctor can make the decision to stay and work in Adelaide, but they won't be entitled to bulk bill or claim a Medicare rebate. And if you want to do that, you need to go to that Medicare specific region, that postcode, and work in that area. It can't be forever. It'll be time limited, 5 years, something of that nature. But unless we do this, we're going to continue to see more and more doctors basically going from graduation to undertaking their professional years in city-based hospitals out into public practice in the city, and we're going to continue to see these shortages in the country.
Mm. Okay, and when's that happening?
Well, it's something that both Rowan Ramsay and I are advocating for. It's not government policy. I hope that it becomes government policy, but I think that the doctor shortage it's not new, as you say, Jenny, but it's becoming more acute, and I've got to tell you, the voices in this place in support of that proposal have grown substantially over the last 12 to 24 months, and I think we might see some movement in the station, or at least I'm trying to make sure we get a policy outcome like that, because I'm confident that once we do that, we'll see doctors in communities like Cadell and Morgan.
Tony Passon, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Jenny.